Possibilities.
Collaborative.
Collaboration.
Positive and optimistic.
Expanding.
Pure life.
Okay. Welcome to Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. I'm Celine Diaris, the host and founder of At the Epicenter, and with me today is Robin O'Brien. She's the author of Unhealthy Truth and Vice President of Replant Capital. Thank you so much for participating in this conversation today. Robin and I have known each other for many years, and I am deeply grateful to you for all of your work in bringing attention to consumers about what's happening in our food system.
Well, Celine, you know, we've been friends for a long time, and you've seen me through a lot of changes, and I appreciate that. And I think that's what we're calling on each other to do. It's what we're calling on the food industry to do. And it's what we're starting to see our farmers do. And so these conversations are so important. And I think what's especially important is to have the grace and flexibility to say, look, we're all learning. We're all on this big learning curve. We've inherited a food system that's broken. We've inherited a financial system that's broken. And you can't fix one without also fixing the other. So the two, to me, go hand in hand. And I think it's a really big conversation. And when we talk about regenerative ag, everybody's talking about that. We see it over and over again now in the food industry. I really think we also have to, at the same time, talk about regenerative finance.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that we're really excited about with this Regenerative Voices podcast is that we want to create a connection for the folks out there, which I like to call citizen consumers, for, you know, how do you move your consuming dollars in a direction that is part of your deep value chain? And one of the opportunities that I know that you and I are both really excited about and what's happening in the food space and the fiber space and fashion is that we're starting to make a connection between how we're farming and how we're addressing climate change.
Oh, God.
Would you like to share a little bit about that? I think it would be, I'd love to hear your perspective.
Well, I think it's so important. I think we're all just waking up to the fact that we've just been sort of asleep at the wheel. And as consumers, we've just been consuming and we haven't necessarily thought all the way back to that process and where things have come from. And I think the first place that we've sort of had this awakening, I call it the food awakening, it was in the grocery store, and all of a sudden we're reading these labels and we're realizing all these ingredients are allowed in our food here in the U.S. that aren't allowed in other countries. And it was sort of that feeling of being duped. And that is a terrible feeling. And unfortunately, a lot of us had that. And with that, there was sort of this energy that came up out of in this reaction. And it's just this like groundswell from the bottom up where consumers woke up and they said, hey, my family's sick. Hey, my dad has cancer. Hey, my sister has diabetes. Hey, my little kid has autism. Hey, my other little kid has food allergies. What's going on? And we all started asking a lot of really good questions. So the opportunity is to say, hey, don't just leave that over here in the food space. We do the exact same thing when it comes to the clothes you're wearing. You know, where did they come from? How were the farmers treated? What kind of crops? I mean, cotton is one of the world's largest crops. It's also one of the world's largest genetically engineered crops. And one of the things I learned was that it was rotated with peanut crops. And so if you've got all this genetically engineered cotton going into the ground, all the chemicals being sprayed on it, and then you're planting peanuts in it as a rotation crop afterwards, well, guess what? The peanuts are sitting in that same soil too. And so it is very much related, food and fiber. And unfortunately, I don't think enough people are aware of that yet. I mean, I wasn't, I had no idea. And what we're starting to see are different brands step forward and say, wow, not only can we think about the way that we're making our food, we can think about the way that we're making our clothes, because, you know, farmers are responsible for so much more than what we put in our mouths. They're responsible for how we dress ourselves every day. They're responsible for the fun you may have on a Friday night when you go out to a bar. I mean, farmers are behind so much of what we do every single day. And I think that's the opportunity, is to step back and say, wow, we really, as a country, lost a generation of education around this. You know, I think about my grandmother in the South. She's 107, and she was so well-versed in the value of food. She knew how precious it was during World War II when she was feeding her four boys. And we sort of accelerated everything and expedited everything and overly processed everything, and we expected to have food 24/7 from around the world at any time. And with that came a process that we're only now just waking up to. And I think that's an enormous opportunity, because I think at heart, the consumer, all of us, the corporations, all of us, like the people inside these companies, at their heart, they're really good people. And once you learn this, you do feel a responsibility to do something. So the real opportunity, it's why your conference is so incredible and so important, is that it's an opportunity to educate each other in a kind, non-judgmental way to say, look, I didn't know this either, now I do, I wish I had known it earlier. And then we can all start to participate in moving this whole thing forward.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought up the summit, because from our perspective, we want to bring and create a welcoming container for everyone to show up, because one of the truths is that we're all learning this at the same time. We learned about our gut biome, and at the same time, we're learning about the soil biome. And there's a lot of synergy between these two foundations of health. You've got ecosystem health at the soil level, you've got human health at the gut level. And interestingly, what we're learning right now is that there's a tremendous parallel, and that the microorganisms that make up an extraordinary percentage of the life forms on this planet are essential to our long-term well-being. And we've accosted them with a chemical attack that has rendered so much soil in farmland across this nation and the world that's essentially dead. And what I'd like to speak to briefly is that soil piece, Robin. You know, how are we starting to re-engage a conversation with farmers who obviously want to be good stewards? How are we opening up a new conversation around this connection between soil, financial stability at the farm level, and then how this is also game-changing for the health and nutrition of our food?
You know, I just think it's so important, because I think, unfortunately, as a country, we divorced ourselves from our farmers. I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know if it was just a lack of education put in place in school systems. I can't speak to why we find ourselves today so divorced from how our food is made. But what's happening, I think, is we're realizing, gosh, we've got to marry these things back together again, because like you said, the microbiome of the soil is directly reflected in our health. We're only as healthy as the food that we eat. And if it's coming out of soil that has been absolutely polluted with all kinds of things, that's what we're absorbing and that's what's going into us. And I think, unfortunately, what happened is we did get really sick as a country. The rates of cancer are off the charts. The rates of pediatric cancer are absolutely off the charts. And I think, unfortunately, it has driven this awakening. For better or worse, I think, you know, no matter how hard it is to move into that light, once you're in it, you can see clearly, and then you can start to see what to do. And I think this whole movement we've started to see around gardens, that's when you really start to experiment a little bit and learn a little bit. I mean, I knew nothing about gardening, and I would ask my neighbors next door what to do, and then I was learning how to build healthy soil. And once you actually take ownership of that process, you understand what the impact can be.
Absolutely.
Not everybody's in a place to do that, because we, you know, we live in cities, we live all over the country. I mean, it's like not everybody's in a place to do that, but we can all plant something in a pot. And I think about the experiments we did as kids coming home from school with a little lima bean in a cup. I mean, you knew how to nourish and nurture that little thing. And I think it's getting back to some of this fundamental knowledge and saying, you know what? No, we were ignorant, and that's okay, because now we're realizing we can heal this. I mean, you think you have to own and acknowledge the ignorance to then move into the process of education and awareness. And so to be able to say, look, there are a lot of us that are coming around the table right now realizing what we didn't know. And a huge piece of that is soil, and to really honor the soil and honor the fact that everything we are, absolutely everything we are, is because of that soil. And I think there's sort of, in a way, a bit of grief you go through. There's shame that you can go through where you realize, wow, these were the things I didn't know. And then once you come into that, you realize like that there is just this enormous amount of work that we can do together. And I think that's where it's, you can't just point the fingers at the food companies. That's too lazy, quite honestly, and that's too simple. I think we have a very systemic problem when it comes to food and farming in our country. We have policy that governs the process that is not in the best interest of the farmers. It's not in the best interest of the consumers. And I think, you know, it's really to step back and say, look, how do we finance our farm system? How do we finance the food system with values that are aligned with health? Because right now with Wall Street on the quarterly earnings model, it's just extractive. And it, right. I think probably one of the biggest, most important data points I ever learned was we farm somewhere around 911 million acres in the United States every year, and only 6 million of those acres are organic, which means less than 1% of our farmland in the United States is organic. And that is absolutely nuts when you think about the fact that 80% of consumers are purchasing something organic. So it's like, where is this coming from? Well, we're importing it. So again, you look at the math and you think, is that in the best interest of our farmers? Not at all. Our farmers should be growing the food Americans want to eat. And right now, they're not doing that because we've got this crop insurance program that subsidizes genetically engineered crops, and that entire operating system that requires all of these agrochemicals like Roundup and pesticides and insecticides and fungicides. You know, it just absolutely, that crop insurance program supports agrochemical corporations and that food production system. And what we're realizing is that if we're going to shift to a cleaner, healthier food system that's better for the soil, that it's going to require more than just offering those different seeds to the farmers. It's going to require more than the technical assistance that helps a farmer learn how to transition off of this chemically intensive operating system into a regenerative one or into an organic one. And it's actually going to take capital that's aligned with these longer term goals. And I think, you know, we've seen a lot of movements around slow money. We've seen a lot of movements around impact investing. And it's really time to marry all of these things together and say, what does the farmer actually need? Well, guess what? You know, if he's going to get off of this chemically intensive operating system, he needs crop insurance. And regenerative ag isn't always covered under these crop insurance programs. And so with that, you can either like throw your hands up in the air and say, oh my gosh, it doesn't exist. Or you can say, wow, there's a huge opportunity to build full-blown support around this industry as it emerges. And what I love about the regenerative movement is it can be, you know, pretty controversial sometimes with some who are deeply, deeply embedded in the organic movement. And I do understand that because they have invested so much into the organic movement. And that is such an incredible North Star to be held up as a process and a way of growing food without these chemical inputs, without things like GMOs, without things like radiation and sewage sludge and artificial colors and artificial growth hormones. It's incredibly important to hold organic as a North Star. However, that can feel incredibly unattainable. And what has always been incredibly important to me is to say, how can we usher in participation? How can we have an on-ramp so that people can begin to participate in this change and then accelerate that rate of change and move towards this better system? And I think regenerative ag offers exactly that. It's saying, look, we know that soil health is struggling. We see it at the farm level, and we see it in our families as we sit around the dinner table knowing all of these conditions. And regenerative ag offers a way for the farmers to get off of that chemically intensive operating system into a system that actually is all about healing the soil. And so it gives them permission to participate. And I think permission to participate is what is so critically important in growing any movement.
That is so well said. I think when you were saying earlier the percentage of land in the United States in terms of what is in cultivation for organic, less than 1%, and you've had the organic movement for 30 years, and we're still at that very, very paltry level of acreage, I think that's where the regenerative conversation becomes a really new turning point, because the folks who haven't decided to become organic farmers, this is a new on-ramp for entering into a different stewardship relationship to their landscape. It's a different opportunity for ecosystem restoration, and it's also a different opportunity for improving their financial diversity and resilience. And I think that's one of the points about regenerative agriculture that really inspires me around how this changes the conversation around how farmers are participating in a more financially robust experience on their farms. So why don't you say a little bit about that? Because I know with Replant Capital, which you're involved in, this is an important new model of financial relationship to bring dollars to the farms.
I think I'm known for being for sounding the alarm on this broken food system for the last 12 years, and to have taken a stage with a TED talk that was translated into dozens of languages, you know, where people were like, oh my gosh, you know. And it's one thing, because somebody has to be up there like sounding that alarm, consistently sounding the alarm, consistently calling out the financial incentives that were in place for a company like Monsanto, consistently calling that out. However, what we need to do now is to say, okay, here's a solution. And it's one thing, like, you definitely need sort of these alarm bells going off around the problem, but you also have to propose a solution, because that's what gives people hope.
Absolutely.
The regenerative movement gives people hope. And I think because of how polarized things got around the food industry, you know, when we had the Grocery Manufacturers Association on one side, and we had, you know, the organic industry on the other side. And it was there was a very clear line, because on one side, it was absolutely no GMOs, none of this chemically intensive operating system. And that is absolutely where I stand. And then on the other side, you have the Grocery Manufacturers Association trying to tell everybody that it didn't matter. And we got into these GMO labeling debates, and there was legislation that was proposed around the country. And even though we lost at the state level and we fought like crazy, I mean, in Colorado, I just gave my life to that legislative movement. The amazing thing that came out of that was this education, and all of a sudden consumers were like, wait, what's in my food? What are you talking about with genetically engineered ingredients and all this glyphosate? And we had this amazing consumer awakening around GMOs and glyphosate. And I think what we're now having is that same kind of thing happening with the farmers, where it's like, they know their soil is unhealthy. They know that it's dying. They know that it's not yielding the same thing because it's not as vibrant and the vitality isn't there. And so they're asking, you know, they're sort of looking at what has gone down between the kind of GMO, chemically intensive operating system, in the organic industry. And it can be as polarizing as any political debate. I mean, when you listen to both sides, it can be that polarizing. And it'd be like trying to convince somebody to switch from one political party to the other. It can get really intense. We don't have time for that. We don't have time to fight over things right now. The UN has said by 2030, global warming is irreversible. So that gives us 11 years, and we don't have time to fight. We have time for action, and it's got to be fast, and it's got to be meaningful. And I think by offering regenerative as a way forward towards organic is my sincere goal, is that we really are able to continue to move people towards these better, healthier processes for the soil. And if you want to argue about it from consumer health, argue about it from consumer health. From soil health, we know for sure that the less chemically intensive operating system is better for the soil. And so what's interesting right now is to be able to offer the farmers the data and the economic arguments that exist around why they would want to convert. And I think, you know, for a long time, we only ever heard that we had GMOs and it was, you know, higher yield, blah, blah, blah. You know, what we're realizing is that if your soil is dying, there are no yields. There are no yields on a dead planet. And so how can we heal the soil? And regeneration, by definition, is the healing of the soil. And so for us to be able to offer that as an opportunity to the farmers, for them to be able to access other sources of capital, because again, the program that we've inherited, even the loans are coming from the same entrenched players. And again, that just doesn't work. And so the invitation really is to participate at the capital level, to participate with technical expertise. We have worked with different groups around the country in Iowa, Missouri, and Kansas that have incredible insight at the farm level. And I think it's to meet farmers where they are. It's not try to corral them or insist or demand. It's to say, look, we honor this expertise. We completely honor this wisdom that you have. I don't have that. I mean, you think about the people that are fifth, sixth, seventh generation farmers, the insight and the wisdom that they have, to honor that and to value that. And I think as a country, that's where we failed, because last year, it was reported that last year, the median farm income in the United States was -$1,548. And it's like, why would anybody go into that as a calling or as a profession? You know, if, as somebody who has four kids that we're going to be putting through college, it's like, you have to think through how your career decisions are going to impact your children. And I think farmers are very much in that same position. You know, if they have negative farm income, how in the world can they support their families? How can they put their children through college? And why would their children want to step into that role? And
so exactly. So how would you sort of take that, the regenerative proposition, and overlay that with this income disparity? How would you bridge that?
I mean, I really think we need to build a better system. And it starts with capital, and the capital has to be aligned, and unfortunately it's not. And so there's an opportunity to offer crop insurance programs around regenerative. There's an opportunity to offer technical expertise to bring these buyers to the table. I mean, General Mills just announced that they want to convert a million acres to regenerative. The demand was so off the charts in the first 24 hours. They were hoping to have 25 farmers and they got 180. So the farmers are there. They are right there. And I think to be able to find these other sources of capital, and again, to sort of say, look, Wall Street in this quarterly earnings model is literally strangling the farmer, and it's strangling our food system, is strangling our ability to convert. And I think, although it may sound radical, you know, what's radical is literally having farmers having negative farm income and not growing the food that our country needs, because food security is national security.
Right.
And what these companies really should be doing at this point, these publicly traded companies coming together and saying, look, we need to petition the SEC and say, this quarterly earnings model literally is killing the food system. And what we need is an annual reporting model. We need some runway so that we can convert this. Or if they're not willing to do that, to get in front of Wall Street and say, look, you guys are measuring us on metrics from 1985. You need to be asking us, what programs do you have in place to convert farmland? What are the metrics around that? What percentage of your farmland is organic? What acreage is in place? What technical assistance are you hiring? Wall Street needs to be asking questions that are relevant to farming today in the 21st century.
So how does climate change play into this conversation in your perspective?
So, you know, again, like I come from Texas, and we've spoken with a lot of farmers, and the term, I think the language you choose to use as you engage in these conversations can either open somebody up or shut them down. And climate change is a term with a lot of farmers will shut them down. We just had a call yesterday with another group of farmers, and they said the exact same thing. They were out in Kansas. Don't come with that language. And again, you have to meet them where they are. And I think the thing they know they need to do is weatherproof their crops. And weatherproofing, you know, in light of all of these epic storms, these floods that we've just seen absolutely just destroy Nebraska, the suicides that are falling because the farmers can't, they can no longer sustain themselves. They can no longer produce what they were capable of producing. These are really big issues. And I think climate change or global warming or weatherproofing, whatever terminology you want to use, that's part of the problem, but that's not the only problem here. You know, I think the financial structure around farming in America is fundamentally flawed. And what we need to do is step back and say, how can we ensure this demographic as a livelihood? How can we ensure farming in America as a profession? Because we have not done that. And I think, you know, ways to do that is through a lot of these insurance programs that you can wrap around these farmers. I mean, part of the reason that they can just literally default year after year after year into genetically engineered crops is because of these crop insurance programs. So if crop fails, they're able to cash out on their insurance program regardless. And I think, you know, we have to really step back and say, what are the incentives here to transition? How do we mitigate that risk? Whether we're talking about, you know, shifting off of fossil fuel towards more alternative energy, whether we're talking about using less of these agrochemicals so that we don't have dead zones in the Gulf. And there are a lot of different really smart ways that we can start to tackle this, but I don't think it's necessarily one thing that's going to be the thing that's going to solve for these farmers. I think what we have inherited is a fundamentally flawed system for farming in America that we absolutely have to rethink.
So I think that's, it's a really powerful opportunity for a lot of systemic change, which is going to take a certain amount of time to accomplish. But I guess kind of circling back to the beginning of the conversation when we were thinking about we as citizen consumers out there trying to discern how we spend our limited resources in a way that, how is that better for a particular farmer in our community? Or how is that better in the sense of companies that are stepping up to try to change some of the conditions that farmers are inside of with much more fair pricing to the farmer in the first place, and kind of moving that through the whole web of custody? What are some of the thoughts you have for us as individuals to be interacting with something so large and seemingly intractable?
That's a great question. And I think what we've got to do is close the distance between the farmer and the consumer. And we're starting to see a lot of companies bring their farmers forward. We have these amazing food industry shows every year. We've had an invitation go out to Expo East for September to say, let us bring 20 farmers. Let us showcase these incredible people who are in the dirt, in the soil, every single day growing our food. You know, let's bring them forward as the heroes that they are in our country. None of us would go a day without them.
No, we wouldn't.
You know, I think about these companies that are starting to to showcase them on boxes. And, you know, there was just a Wheaties box that featured Gabe Brown, and Gabe Brown is just the guy right now that everybody is talking about. But there are others, and there are other farmers of color, and there are incredible, extraordinary souls, you know, and to really bring them forward. If you are a food company listening to this right now, highlight those farmers, bring them forward, bring them into your offices, let them listen to the consumer, bring the moms and the farmers together, because then you've got a direct line of communication. And I think what we've inherited is a system that's got all these middlemen, and everybody's taking a cut and a slice and a chunk, and I think it has created this broken system. So if we can get that middleman out of it and really connect the consumer with the farmers, and I think, you know, we as consumers can ask for that. We can ask questions from our companies. Where is this being grown? How can I support the farmers that are growing these foods? We can ask for that participation. And then I think there's a lot of leadership opportunity for the food companies across the industry, organic, conventional, anybody, is to bring these farmers forward. Mm-hmm. And highlight them as the heroes that they are. And I think the food industry, one of the things we do is we find like three people, and we tend to like circulate them around every single conference. And it's like, there are hundreds and hundreds of these extraordinary farmers, so many women, so many people of color. My invitation is to, you know, diversify, show the beautiful fabric that is farming in the United States, and allow that participation to happen.
I love that, the beautiful fabric of the diversity of farming in this country. It's so true, and it's so exciting. And as we go forward with our podcast, we are planning conversations where brands are bringing farmers into a dialogue with us, so we can have that kind of transparent discussion about what is it like to be a farmer? What are your challenges? What are the opportunities? And how is this brand changing its conversation with you?
Well, I had a conversation with a farmer, Steve Tucker from Nebraska, recently, and he said, "Robin, how would you define regenerative?" And I remember thinking, "Oh my gosh, this feels like a really important test." out there, and I described what I thought it was to him, and he was like, "And I think, you know, we need those conversations." I said, "Steve, how would you define it? That's more important. Mm-hmm. How would you define it?" And I think those conversations, how can we close the gap between the farmer and the consumer? Because I think that's ultimately what's going to heal the system.
I agree. I am so grateful for your time today. Is there anything else you want to add, or do you feel like we've sort of covered an exciting gamut?
I'm super excited, Celine, that you're doing this, and that conference is visionary and it's extraordinary. And anyone who is listening to this podcast really needs to get that on the calendar, because it does create a very collaborative, the energy is incredibly positive. There's no finger pointing. It's, look, how can we come together? We all want to be part of the solution. And where can you lend your talents? I think none of us can do everything, and all of us can do something. So it is that invitation to participate. And to me, you really could spend a lot of time hanging your head and being worried about the problems, and these headlines can get pretty dire. But if you flip that script, what it is also saying is there is enormous opportunity to get involved and be part of the solution.
Absolutely. And thank you for saying that about the Regenerative Earth Summit. I really appreciate it. And we will be live streaming. So the summit will be on October 29th and 30th. It's based here in Boulder, Colorado. You can visit our website at theepicenter.com and go to our events. And if you can't attend in person, you can absolutely watch the live stream and really see what people in both the fashion, the food, and the beauty care industries are doing to really bring more conscious intention to how they're working with farmers, how they're supporting these transitions to more soil conscious practices that do a whole world of good for our beautiful planet, which I think we all would say we love and cherish. So there's a lot of opportunity here.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Celine. It's been so fun doing this with you. I'm so honored. And I just can't wait to see who else you have on. So thank you.
Well, I so appreciate you. And thank you again.
The Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change podcast series is produced by At the Epicenter, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The podcast and video recordings are made possible by the generous support of people like you. Make a tax-deductible donation or sign up as a monthly supporter by visiting attheepicenter.com/donate. Support packages start at $1 per month. The podcast series is also sponsored by several corporate and organization sponsors. To become a podcast sponsor, visit attheepicenter.com/contact to let us know of your interest. If you found this podcast episode insightful and meaningful, please pass it on by sharing it with a friend or colleague who will also enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in, for your support, and for activating change.